I'm Dave DeWitt. This is Tested from WUNC, a daily look at how North Carolina is dealing with COVID-19 and what we're learning about ourselves in the face of a global crisis. Today, reporting. Earlier this month, when Governor Roy Cooper issued his executive order that people stay at home, he listed out some essential businesses and operations that could continue. The list included the obvious, like grocery stores and pharmacies. But the essential list also included car mechanics, hardware stores, and news media outlets. No one in my profession believes for a second that reporters are on par with healthcare workers or pharmacists on the list of most essential. But access to verified, accurate information is important. And that means we, like everyone else, have had to adjust. Like WRAL anchor Catherine Brown.
This is certainly a first for me, reporting from the newest WRAL remote studio, which until just a couple hours ago strongly resembled my guest bedroom.
Anchors and reporters are taking these steps to practice good social distancing themselves. It's an ethical consideration that's new for many of us. Managing risk is not new for WUNC's Jay Price. He's reported from active war zones, but the nature of this kind of risk is different.
Now, at war, I think I was more careful in Afghanistan and Iraq than most, maybe less careful than others, but there are key differences. Any risk I took there jeopardized the future of my family to some degree, but it didn't directly jeopardize their lives. And anytime I start thinking about going out in the field for reporting now, during this pandemic, or even to go to the grocery store for that matter, I do make that part of the equation. I'm willing to take far less risk because of that. They shouldn't have to pay for my recklessness. And even bigger, I have a responsibility now, just like all of us do, to the rest of the community to not spread the coronavirus if I have it and am simply asymptomatic.
So let's start there with Rose Hoban, editor of North Carolina Health News, talking about journalistic and social responsibility in these times.
I think there's fatigue, first off. You know, my team, like, jumped into, and I did too, jumped into the story running hard like it was hurricane coverage, right? Like, you know, you're running and you're doing it. You're cranking out a couple stories a day. But, you know, hurricane coverage is like 3, 4, maybe 5 days of intensity and then a really long tail afterward. Mm-hmm. And I took a look at this at first and thought, you know, like probably like in mid-March and was like, oh man, this is going to be months. So I pretty quickly told my team to slow down and dial it back and let's take the long view and let's write some more contextual stories. You know, a lot of good that did me. Because, you know, they're all really driven and they're all professionals and they want to, you know, this is like story of the century. Like everyone wants to be part of it. So trying to get everybody to just like dial it back a little bit. Because the stories are still going to be there. But I think, you know, my reporters, like they're looking around, they're seeing the competition. Oh, they did that story and I didn't, you know, and I'm like, that's okay. Mm-hmm. There's plenty of stories to go around. And then, you know, there's just the worry about my team and their health. Like, you know, it's no secret that part of our success is that I've been able to recruit folks who are refugees from chain papers who've been like cutting loose or they've taken buyouts or they've retired. So they're really super experienced and they know what they're doing. But like the age demographic for my outfit is like a U, right? I have a handful of young reporters and then a bunch of older reporters and like me and one other person in the middle. I mean, except that I probably fit into the older reporter group. But, you know, like, so that means some of my reporters are like at higher risk because of their age if they contract this thing. So I worry about that, too.
And so obviously a lot of people are doing a lot of different kinds of stories. What tips do you have for people to evaluate whether a story they see is accurate or trustworthy, especially as it pertains to health information and clinical studies? I know you read a lot of clinical studies.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they could just read North Carolina Health News. But I joke. I digress. Yeah. You know that we talked about that whole the science of this pandemic is going at dangerous speeds. I think it's again, it's always like take a breath. Slow down. I always suggest, like, you know, we always link to our sources, right? I'm always telling people attribution, please, in my editing notes, attribution, please. I think that's helpful in building trust that we're showing our work. Mm-hmm. Folks can also see that we're taking statistics or ideas and maybe taking them out of context. I'm always encouraging people to say, you know, what's the source, even if they're reading our content. I use the criteria from the old Health News Review, which was a website that was geared toward helping health reporters do a better job at reporting on, particularly on studies. And I use that to judge about healthcare reporting. Their 10 tips are right on my trackpad for where I've got my my mouse. And that my radar go up when I see, like, from them, I get this advice to have your radar go on when you see the words breakthrough or game changing, because that's usually hype. Mm-hmm. I look for stories that discuss the benefits of a treatment or an intervention, as well as the drawbacks and potential harms. And I watch for language that's not too laudatory or too dismissive of something. Mm. You know, like, the reality, truth is kind of boringly in the middle. And, you know, and that's kind of the thing that I think about a lot.
So there are a lot of fantastic reporters out there doing remarkable work. Is there a story you've seen locally, nationally, internationally that you thought was particularly well done, or you saw and thought, man, wish we had done that?
Well, there's a, I really would like to point to The Atlantic. I think they're doing some terrific explanatory journalism around COVID. There's a writer there named Alex Madrigal, and he's dug into the numbers and contextualized them, which, you know, makes me swoon. He's written stories like How to Understand Your State's Coronavirus Numbers, and he's talked about the lack of testing and delays in testing and how they've exacerbated the crisis. The Atlantic has also got content by science writer Ed Young, who's a great explanatory journalist. I hate him. It's just professional jealousy because he does such a great job. He wrote a piece about why coronavirus has been so successful as a virus, which was really interesting. It was very sciencey but accessible. He wrote about the controversy around masks really well. And his most recent piece about the, quote, end, unquote, of the pandemic was really well done, too. He hasn't sugarcoated anything. Like, in that piece, he said, even a perfect response won't end the pandemic. As long as the virus persists somewhere, there's a chance that one infected traveler will reignite fresh sparks in countries that have already extinguished their fires. This is already happening in China, Singapore, and other Asian countries that briefly seemed to have the virus under control. God, I would have loved to have done that story, or been the person to have published that story.
Next week, just like this week, likely to be a pretty crucial week in this pandemic. What will you be watching?
Oh, I'm not sure any week is particularly more crucial than another. They've all been so crucial, right? Like, mm-hmm. You know, making the moves to get people to stay home, making the moves to get people to take this seriously, to get hospitals ready, to get all those other people protected, you know, grocery workers and sanitation workers and postal carriers, all those folks. I think this coming week is likely to be more dramatic than anything, and perhaps sad, as we see more hospitalizations and deaths. And, you know, we might end up having to pivot to writing those stories about, you know, Joe Blow, who died and he was such a great grandfather. And those are going to be painful stories to write and report. I don't know. What will I be watching? I'll watch how hospitals do, which hospitals seem like they're overwhelmed, and which ones are doing well. I'm afraid we're going to see more outbreaks in more long-term care facilities. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's not just one metric or situation I'm going to be watching for.
Rose Hoban is the editor of NorthCarolinaHealthNews.org. Hang tight. More in a moment.
Tested is a production of WUNC North Carolina Public Radio, and this is a good time to say thank you to everyone who supports WUNC. Whether you're an individual donor or a business, we cannot say thank you enough for providing us with the resources and opportunity to serve the state of North Carolina with up-to-the-minute news and information. Everyone at WUNC is working around the clock to do just that at this unique and perilous moment in our history, and we couldn't manage without your help. So thank you. And if you're able, please go to WUNC.org if you want to donate for the first time, or perhaps increase your support.
Jews around the world celebrated the holiday of Passover this week, gathering around dinner tables to retell the biblical story of being led out of slavery in Egypt by Moses. As with many people of different faiths, Jewish people had to adapt their rituals to the constraints of living amid the coronavirus outbreak. Social gathering apps enabled many Jewish families to come together virtually for traditional Passover meals called seders. WUNC's Rusty Jacobs, his wife, and children were joined by Rusty's mother in Florida and his sister in Colorado. He filed this audio montage.
Why is this night different from all other nights? On all other nights, we can eat either.
Pharaoh ordered that the Hebrew people become slaves. They were forced to work day and night.
God heard their cries and made the Egyptians suffer with terrible punishments called plagues.
Boils burst from their skin.
Wait, where's the boils one?
They were so uncomfortable.
There were diseases that could not be cured. Coughing, sneezing, sore throats, gasping for breath.
Finally, the Pharaoh was convinced that the Hebrew people were freed from their slavery, and he allowed them to leave.
But after they left Egypt, the Pharaoh changed his mind.
All right, can you do a little less Twilight Zone?
The armies of Egypt were behind them, and a great sea was in front of them. The sea held...
Oh! I remember this game now. We're gonna try to find the monsters.
Hotsiyanu, hotsiyanu, mi mitzvayim, hotsiyanu, mi mitzvayim, dayenu.
Everybody raise your glass. May there be freedom and peace for us, for everyone. This is our hope.
WUNC's Rusty Jacobs and his family celebrating Passover earlier this week. That's it for this episode of Tested. I'm Dave DeWitt. Lindsay Foster Thomas is our executive producer. Brent Wolf is WUNC's news director. Thanks for listening. See you Monday.